Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
Hello, welcome one, welcome all to all of you sadists out there who keep listening to this double feature, who find weeks in a row and just continuing to kick. I am Eric 13. I am here with Michael Kester, or at Pling Michael, as you're known on
at
the...
At Pling Michael, as I'm known on the interweb.
Yeah, what is that like to have a consistent Twitter handle? That must be nice.
Dude, it's fantastic. I don't know if you know this about when I switched my... You knew me before I was Pling Michael.
You knew me before Michael? I was Eric 13, so yeah, I guess we're even.
But when I switched the handle over to Pling Michael, because it was so stupid, I managed to acquire Pling Michael at everything. So, I don't even have to tell people my email address. I just go Pling Michael at whatever, and I get it.
Yeah, that's the nice thing. I legally had my name changed, so this is literally my name. And before I did it, you better believe I checked out all the handles and all the things. How often do you get to go, oh, wait, I can clean up my fucking email address and my Twitter handle, and I could just get everything all erase my internet history?
Sure. It's that thing. I always talk to people about how none of us ever realized how often we were going to have to say our email address out loud. And we're in that mid-generation where we had screen names and our screen names were fucking lame and emotional. And then that just converted to email addresses. And then people are like, so what's your email address? And you're like, ah, XX stealing hearts, XX at yahoo.com.
XX band of the week that you've haven't fucking heard the name of except for in this email address. Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. Kids, when we were young, people were afraid to say their names on the internet. It's true. Very true. And now I wonder if I'm doing that for our executive producers and they're getting upset every week.
Well, they haven't
tweeted us yet.
Today, well, they will, because today we're talking about critics. And we're talking about it in two different voices, two different ways, two different levels of meta removal. We're going to talk about Kevin Smith, who... We have already, I think we've discussed his feelings on critics a little bit on the show, but Yoga Hosers presents something that I will argue, just based on his weight in the cinema world, has never quite been presented as wonderfully as it's presented in Yoga Hosers. And then we're going to get a little bit more literal in the second film, Theater of Blood, which is just a movie about a actor who,
now that we've identified critics. The critics are bad, what do? Oh, murder them all.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll see how long we can follow that. It'll be like last week. We'll see how much of the trail we can follow before we're off the boat. Be like, okay, yeah, critics bad. I get it. Destroying the art. Okay. Murder them all. Are you going to do it in a clever Shakespearean kind of way? Because then, I mean, I guess if.
Will there be gay Vincent Price in an afro? I will accept anything up to and including that moment.
Yeah. In some ways, his soul man moment in strange ways.
He's in gay face.
If there was like, there probably is in the future. And I just can't. Yeah, right?
I mean, it's actually kind of offensive what he does.
Yeah. No, you're right.
We're in the future of the film where what he does is a little offensive.
Yeah. Although because it's Vincent Price, I can't believe that anybody captured that. And then I'm like, okay, well, somebody got Vincent Price to do that. So all for that. Halfway through the show, we're going to try and skip. I don't know how long anything's going to go in my whole life, except how long Yoga Hosers was. And I mean, holy fuck, man. I didn't think back when we did Tusk that you could make a movie to alienate the audience more purposefully.
Exactly.
Than Yoga Hosers.
I'm so glad that that's what you got. Yeah.
That is, I mean, part of my interest that we have to tackle is sort of like when we look at Quentin Tarantino and go, how did he do this masterful thing? I want to know how you annoy the fuck out
how
of
you
an
hate
audience.
Fuck your audience. Yeah, exactly.
How you hate fuck your audience to this degree with the stamina.
So I went to see Yoga Hosers in the theater, which is something that I wish I could impart that memory like implant it into your mind. But and I went day one. So imagine go to the first local screening of Yoga Hosers with hungry Kevin Smith fans. Okay. And these are people that, and I'll explain why this is interesting, but these are people that love Mallrats and they live for Clerks and the poster's not even in their bathroom. It's in their fucking front room.
Sure.
You know, sure. And they're just all about this Dogma and Kevin Smith is just their fucking cinematic hero. And then I'm sitting there, no secret on the show, the guy who kind of went, Kevin Smith's early stuff was kind of garbage, but Red State was good. And everything since then's been really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm the other guy.
Where you're like, room. Oh, we needed more hate fucking in Clerks. Where was that?
Right. And so I'm watching Yoga Hosers just like, not only am
Michael
I feeling
Kester, the one person who was won over by new.
Right.
Kevin Smith,
so this is the
fan.
Amazing thing, right? Is I'm sitting in the theater and the movie is going, I'm going to hate fuck my audience, but I'm there for the hate fucking.
You stare into its eyes and go, I love you.
No, I don't even do that. I sit smoking a cigarette in the side of the room and watch the audience get hate fucked for an hour and 20 minutes.
Oh, you mean you are the audience spectator?
Yeah, I showed up for what the movie delivered.
Right.
I'm going, this better
You're
be
in the
a
back
hate fucking
with Kevin Smith going, what's going
to
happen?
Yeah. And so I'm watching this. I put it to you while you texted me while you were watching it. And I was like, every time I watch it, it gets worse and it makes me love it so much more.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is moments of this film are just unwashably cringeworthy. And the reason that that succeeds is because they were unwashably cringeworthy on the fucking storyboard.
Oh yeah.
That's the beauty.
There's no moment of how did this fall apart?
Yeah.
There's no going back. There's maybe moments of, how did this turn out even better than they planned on the storyboard?
Right. I mean, well, that's the thing is I feel like Kevin Smith comes out of the gate with Yoga Hosers going, I'm going to make a stupid fucking movie. I'm going to make it.
Yeah. I mean, look at the pro. I didn't believe this was fucking happening.
Right.
Up to the moment after it came out. I was just like, no one is going to let you make that. You're right. Not really sincere. You are basically just going, oh yeah, you think you don't like this Walrus one?
Right.
You don't fucking know. What if I give you a trilogy, asshole?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, yeah, I see your antagonism. Mm-hmm. And then it came out and I went, oh, really?
Yeah. The next one is called Moose Jaws, which is a, you know, Jaws, but a moose.
Let's skip right to that question then.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there is a, you said cringeworthy, and I think that's right where it is. But I don't know that I've ever seen anybody try to deliver cringeworthy at the pace of Scott Pilgrim.
Right. No, perfect. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's what it is.
So here's a wonderful fucking reason to defend some more art here on the show and why I love these little empathy machines we build is that think about a cringe. Somebody delivers a bad joke, it sits stale in the air, and you have a moment to just, ugh, it's your body just repelling the joke.
Your spine shivers like a sour thought.
What if you did not give people the time to cringe at the cringe jokes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What if
you're like cringe edging?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You're thinking, you know, and part of comedic timing is presenting just enough time to allow. Nothing I ever say on this show is funny, but because the talking never ceases and there's no dead air, at no point does it get so fucking awkward that people can't listen to it.
Right.
I hope. And I think where you might assume that not allowing those gaps helps deflate some of the cringe.
Mm-hmm.
I believe once we perform the experiment,
snowballs.
When you are pelted with a sea of dicks, you just can't. There's no, just what are you going to do? You're almost frozen in terror of this cringe and it just keeps assaulting you. I don't know if anyone thinks this movie's funny, but it's definitely funnier to me right now than any joke I've ever heard. I can barely contain myself.
I've watched Yoga Hosers 3 times. I love Yoga Hosers is one of those movies that reaches into a place in my brain and just touches a thing that I didn't know I needed to be fondled.
Your third clit.
Exactly. And I'm watching Yoga Hosers and the perfect blend that makes Yoga Hosers such a joy for me to watch. One is the hate fucking. I mean, hate fucking is a massive component of why I love this film. But the other reason I love this film, there are three characters in this film that love being these characters. And so there's a certain affection for this that's resonating amid the hate fucking.
Yeah.
Because the Colleens love being on screen and Kevin Smith loves the Colleens. So whether they're performing well or performing poorly, it doesn't matter because you feel this resonance in the film of, but we really like them.
Yeah.
And then this will be wildly disagreed with briefly while everybody, you know, hears me and then goes, huh, and then just goes about their day.
Prepare to put down the laundry you're doing while listening to this podcast for just a moment.
This is hands down Johnny Depp's best role in the history of cinema.
Whoa. I'd have to stop the laundry to do the show for a second here.
I would rather watch Johnny Depp.
You have trapped me because in the format of our show, Johnny Depp is only on one of the movies and therefore he's on the best movie. I mean,
right.
Listen, come on, double feature. Two movies are the best movie. I feel like I'm not allowed to argue with you because right now there's only two movies that exist and he's not in the
other one. I'm not saying it's my favorite Johnny Depp movie. I'm saying if I'm going to watch Johnny Depp perform, it's going to be in this role.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
I mean, you know, we've done Ed Wood. We've done Edward Scissorhands. Tim Burton's filmography alone is the gamut of his successes and failures as an actor. But Guy Lapointe in Yoga Hosers, also in Tusk briefly, but in Yoga Hosers, I feel like Guy Lapointe is the tire to Yoga Hosers' rubber. It's the one character is absolutely indecipherable within the context of the movie, but unmistakably belongs and masters what is going on.
Yeah. Well, this is also, I feel like there is no question about why Johnny Depp does this, and I think he is probably so gung-ho to sign up for as many as possible. When you go back to before things like this existed in Johnny Depp's career, you might say something crazy like Johnny Depp has three characters and just does them over and over, and he just shows up and can phone it in, people will see it, and it won't be bad, frankly. Johnny Depp phoning it in is still, on the scale of acting, pretty fucking good. And there's nothing like this character in any Johnny Depp thing ever. He is not mimicking fucking anything. There's nothing from real life to even draw from. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't even...
You're not saying that he's drawing on some character with a traveling mole from earlier in his filmography?
Yeah. It's just not from his filmography, not from time and space on planet Earth. You know, it's just such a wild thing. And to bury himself under, you know, obnoxious makeup and to throw himself into a character like that. And also, I don't understand much about actors, certainly on a personal level, but God, could I see why one would want to do this? You know, imagine if you had a role that I told you were going to do a role and no matter what you did, everyone's going to hate it. And also, it doesn't really matter how you do. And here, put on this obnoxious makeup. I mean, how could you, it's a playground. How could you do any wrong?
Yeah.
I would, you know, if someone promised me I'm about to do a show and no one would see it, or no matter what, at the end of the show, we would discover the Fountain of Youth. I would go, well, it doesn't really fucking matter what I do, does it? This is going to be an easy one. And his character, and I think you're right, the Colleens, the more they revel in it, the more that effect just kind of punches you. The opening of this movie is perfect. I don't know while they're singing what is even happening.
Right.
I don't know like what they're, is this like they improv and one gets it wrong and that's happening like at a character level in the movie? Clearly it's like a scripted thing. We're not doing like a total improv deal, but are they mocking each other or is it like part of the fucking song?
Right.
Or like what is the, I don't even know how to, this is like the establishing moment of the type of humor and affection. And it just goes, these are millennials that you have no...
Yeah, you're not going to get this.
You aren't related. They're from a fake Canada that doesn't even exist. Zero people will identify
and
with these guys.
That level of alienation to an audience is why I love Yoga Hosers. As I sit there watching Yoga Hosers, and sure, I'm a millennial in so much that I think there's a definition for that now, and I think I fall within the year gap.
But you fall enough years that I also fall. So there you have it.
And so I understand to a certain degree that this is millennial talk written by a 45-year-old man. You know, their use of buzzwords like basic and hashtag are ham-fisted and don't make any goddamn sense in real context, let alone the context of the film.
It almost makes so little sense that they could make a thing of it.
Exactly.
Like, if people all started using basic this way, I'd go, well, yeah, that was bound to happen.
Yeah.
It sort of becomes its own meme.
Yeah. Well, and that's probably why I like watching Yoga Hosers, is because it's copying itself in my brain like a meme. I watch it. And I mean, similar to David Lynch.
Uh-huh. Go on.
I watch Yoga Hosers and it ends and I go, okay, let's watch something else like that. And then I briefly sit there and I go, I guess it's Yoga Hosers again. Because there's nothing else like this. And so if you got this far in the show today, listening, Podmanity, if you got this far into the show and you haven't watched Yoga Hosers, because you'll be disappointed, and you may will, and that's the film succeeding. So unfortunately, fuck you.
But what are you going to do now?
But we have gotten this far in our conversation about Yoga Hosers, and not once.
I know.
Did we mention that the villain?
I know.
Are little Nazi bratwursts.
Uh-huh. More or less cringeworthy than the actual villain.
Yeah.
That we, the impression loaded villain.
The level of understanding that Kevin Smith has making this film, it's not like he's going, we need to get an impressions guy. And one guy in the room was like, I can do these typical impressions. And he goes, but your kids won't get them. And Kevin Smith goes, we're really strapped for impressions, though. We'll just write around you. Yeah. He could easily have gotten an impressions guy who was more hip to the younger impressions, but he wanted to string along this bizarre I learned from daytime TV joke.
Yep.
And I mean, the latter portion of the film, the heavy-handed hamster style yoga nonsense. I mean, the movie sets up all these hamsters that by the time we get to the end, we're like, wow, no cheese wheels at all. This is 100% fulfilled hamster style.
Hamster pay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I believe that was a hamster dance back in the day when it's just hamster style after hamster style after. Yes. And it's just, you just go, but why though? You don't need them all.
You're being pelted with hamsters.
Yeah.
That's what's happening. Oh, really quick, actually, because it's so fucking fitting. If you wanted to do it sincerely, I think what you just described is Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah.
I think the man who comes out and no one goes, this guy's going to do impressions. And then he nails a bunch of impressions from like the 30s perfectly. And you go, well, I didn't really see that coming. That is Gilbert Gottfried. That guy exists and he's famous and gettable and does movies. And you go, no. But my friend Carl.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, man. How many times do you think he sent the VFX back and said, no, but worse?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I really don't know. Listen, I had to learn VFX this year, and it actually takes a certain amount of skill to even like do it this way. I mean, the comps and the lighting, they had to actually make sure that the scene was colored in such a way where the colors from the VFX couldn't even fucking exist in the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you could get the footage raw and color it to the raw and then grade the whole thing as one so it all ties together. But instead they go, what if we blue filter this whole place and then no blue in the VFX, just only neon greens.
Yeah. Well, and then all of this is wonderfully predicated on the thing that we talked about at the beginning of this conversation, which this is fucking Kevin Smith.
I know.
The Clerks guy. The Mallrats guy, the Dogma guy, this guy, he doesn't have a problem making movies. There is nobody
doing just fine.
There's nobody sitting there going, you can't make movies. And he's going, well, I'll make movies for $20. It might look like Yoga Hosers, but you know, go to patreon.com/Kevin Smith if you want it to look better than Yoga Hosers.
Right.
But instead he's just going, he's on a fucking podcast and he goes, I don't know, like bratwurst Nazis. And then money shows up in his bank account and he's like, I guess I'll make the bratwurst Nazis thing. And then, every second conversation they go, so you're making bratwurst Nazis. And he's like, yeah, then Clerks 3. And the people are like, whoa, Clerks 3. And then he makes bratwurst Nazis and everybody's furious.
He's like, well, I don't know if I get to make both. So
furious.
Definitely got to do this one.
And then people go, Clerks 3 next. And he's like, yeah, of course I'm doing Clerks 3. And everybody's like, oh, thank God. Cause we love you so much. You're just, we love Kevin Smith. And he's like, I love Kevin Smith too. So I'm going to do Moose Jaws next. And they're like, but what about Clerks 3? And he's like, you said you love Kevin Smith. And they go, well, we actually like Clerks. And he goes, well, fuck you. We're doing Moose Jaws. We're doing Yoga. Like he has grabbed his career so much by the horns that he just goes, you know what? Fuck you. I'm officially actually just making the movies I want.
Ultimate auteur.
Yeah.
Ultimate.
I mean, he hit a point. I believe it was Cop Out when he was like, you know what? Critics are going to hate everything. Uh-huh. Critics hate everything. That's their job to hate shit. So fucking I'm doing Tusk. I'm doing Red State. I'm doing Yoga Hosers. Yeah. The idea of putting a camera in a convenience store, what is challenging is something like Yoga Hosers.
Well, and also I see him doing the same thing we talked about with the acting, which is just, oh, this is a well-worn path, convenience store. I mean, like to go so far the other direction that he then goes, and I'll make a jab and put it in another fucking convenience store because this is just my way of going. It's kind of like Clerks 3, guys.
Yeah.
It's another, you're not excited for the new Kevin Smith convenience store movie? I mean, who doesn't like, it's in Canada, eh? You know, like Degrassi. Everybody loves Degrassi. No, weren't around for that period. Well, that's pretty much what you're getting right now. So it's, imagine, if you will, for the portion of the audience who isn't a Kevin Smith diehard. And even for us, I would say, what if Quentin Tarantino came out and said, I'm only doing 3 more films and then I'm retiring forever, and actually meant it, not like he really
you
does
mean two work. More, yeah. But yeah,
clearly.
Right.
No, that's, there will be a million more Tarantino films. I might be wrong. If I'm wrong, the world's about to get a lot worse. You thought it was pretty bad. It's going to get a lot worse. But then he goes, and at least 2 of them have to be these Canadian moose movies. You just go, no, wait. No, hold on. You're not going to be alive forever. Really, those are the ones you want to make? But you're only doing 3 more movies? The moose one? That's the one you want to do? And I can only imagine that it must make the real Kevin Smith diehards go fucking ballistic.
Right.
Just whatever view askew universe type thing they thought they were going to get, where it all ties together and it gives them a nice little like, nope, moose movie.
Yeah.
And I feel pretty validated from this because I remember when we did Tusk and I went out on a little bit of a limb, and I think you were there with me, of, hey, maybe this guy just can do anything he wants and he's going to make dick jokes with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought at the time that, I'm trying to figure out Tusk and maybe Kevin Smith is enjoying the power of getting to make whatever and just chooses to use the power for the most senseless, unnecessary thing. And I feel 100% validated.
Yeah.
I feel like that's only what Yoga Hosers could possibly be.
Kevin Smith's career is essentially like he broke up with somebody, but had signed a legally binding contract to come back on his birthday every 2 years and have sex with them.
Listen, I don't know that it's going to get more perfect than that. After making Red State, it's a movie that I'm going to make another wild Kevin Smith prediction type thing. Maybe he's talked about this. I think Red State might have been the beginning of Megan Phelps leaving the Westboro Baptist Church. You know, back when they were like a big thing and then it all just kind of fell apart. I mean, you know, the guy dying, but also no one carrying on his fucking legacy.
Mm-hmm.
I think he might have Trojan horse something without a Trojan. I think he might have hate fucked Megan Phelps and she kind of liked it.
Yeah.
I think that's what might have happened there. And after that, you get to make Yoga Hosers. That's something you get to do.
Oh. And if you've already created The Fly and countless Corman Poe movies, and you've already created The Last Man on Earth and William Castle films left and right, you've become an iconic Hammer horror villain. and a champion of just horror cinema for your entire career, sometimes you get to kill everybody that doesn't like you.
Yeah. I'm glad that we really get to get in deep to the critic stuff on this, because I think it's funny when we look at the reaction to Yoga Hosers giving the finger to critics and critics all going, oh yeah, well, I'll give the finger back. But back when Theater of Blood came out, I feel like it was critical of critics, and then the critics were forced to say it was good because of that. It kind of like called their, like,
yeah,
what are you going to be like? Oh, I hate that movie. Then everyone's just going to go, oh yeah, that's because it kills critics.
Right. Yeah. Oh, really? You don't like pussy? That? You don't like a movie that kills critics? Yeah. Huh,
I don't know why that doesn't work today for Yoga Hosers, but it should.
It's got Vincent Price in it, man.
Yeah, well, maybe that's it. Although, Johnny Depp is the Vincent Price of Theater of Blood, isn't he? I
mean, You're right.
I don't know. I don't know why that's not working today. That's something we're not going to be able to figure out, I don't think, and is probably the most important question of today's show. Why doesn't it continue to work? I don't know. Theater of Blood is a movie that I think in that way kind of pays tribute to Vincent Price's career and to a lot of the... It's the movie that is... it's almost a self-aware Vincent Price film if Vincent Price made a movie today about the rest of his career.
To me, it seems so much like a film where they went, we got Vincent Price, and they go, okay, wow. What if we just have him run through like a fuck ton of Shakespeare?
As much Shakespeare. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Fuck ton of Shakespeare and go.
It's just like, he's a powerhouse and I'm not a good enough writer. If we're going to have to lean on something, can we get Shakespeare in here to do a rewrite or something?
Yeah, it's funny. It's a really good plan, actually. Kudos on that plan. That probably didn't come together that way, but let's pretend it did for the sake of double feature. Well, I feel like when you look back on Vincent Price type movies, you go, oh yeah, didn't he do all that sort of horror-y Shakespeare stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And not really.
No.
Only Shakespeare-y stuff.
No.
You know, there's the Poe stuff. All of his movies kind of have this gothic, poetic.
Classic.
Yeah, very much. And people think of him as that type of actor, which I also think is pretty amazing for that era, given that he changed our impressions of what his movies are because of who he is. He was a guy who was in, I mean, we're talking about Corman, you know?
Mm-hmm. Who's in Castle.
Yeah. Who goes back and goes, oh, the reputations of those people were going to make their films seem retroactively like Shakespeare, because we all have this idea in our heads that Vincent Price did Shakespearean stuff. And we have that idea because he did Corman schlock, you know?
Right. But he all, and those like Subway commercials.
And those... What?
We'll talk on it after the show. It's the only thing that's more enjoyable to watch than Orson Welles drunkenly sell wine.
Are you... Is this... I'm not sure I can finish the show. Subway commercials. Like in a Subway? Like a Subway... Like
it's a sandwich commercials. There's commercials for sandwiches.
No. Oh, I was so expecting you to have an out. Like, just kidding. They're for the CTA. That's what I was really thinking. Oh. Glorious. But to be somebody who basically broke from, you know, he eliminated being the type of typecast that he was by giving such performances that it tricked people into thinking. Imagine if Bruce Willis were only doing dramas and no one fucking knew that, because we all go, oh yeah, the action guy. And we only did that because he showed up to dramas and went, I'm the action guy. I'm going to make this seem like I'm doing a lot of action. And 20 years from now, we go back and look at all the Bruce Willis films and everybody just cries in them and there's no action at all.
Right.
He was just such a fucking powerhouse that we go, oh yeah, didn't he do all those action-y type films? That's the sort of thing Vincent Price gets away with.
Yeah, Bruce Willis showing up in The Expendables, you're like, of course. And then you watch his filmography and you're like, Die Hard 1 and 3, huh?
Yeah. And a retroactive version of Die Hard where there's more crying in it. I mean, really, there's just, to go back through the Vincent Price stuff, he elevates the films he's in, and you kind of wonder how he has the ability to do that, because it's not because he has this great reputation as someone who always did Shakespeare. He just somehow gives you that impression. And then seeing him in this role and seeing that not only does he I mean, he performs this Shakespeare, but it's not as if this is really played out the way you said, like an elaborate device so we can bask in him doing Shakespeare, although we certainly do that. He's also, you know, he's dressed up in gay face. You know, that's what you said before. Right.
It's, and Jew face.
Yeah. Seriously. The movie is also Vincent Price doing these absurd parts that I feel like really, when I'm honest about the movie, have more of a sort of lasting power to them. I'm going to remember the weird things he dressed up in for this movie and how crazy and outlandish it was to see him do those parts more than I'm going to remember what his Hamlet looked like. You know what I mean? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the fuck that says other than Theater of Blood is amazing.
It's insane to watch a movie like Theater of Blood and just realize how legitimate of an actor Vincent Price was throughout his career, because we see him in movies. I mean, I'm thinking, when I think of Vincent Price, I always think of Fall of the House of Usher, the Corman.
Sure.
Fall of the House of Usher. And I think of The Tingler in those films, even in House on Haunted Hill. It's the classic image of Vincent Price in a smart pinstriped suit with the mustache and the slicked hair. And the only other kind of image I have of Vincent Price, other than the sandwiches, is Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah.
When he's old and gray and fragile and in a smock. And I never get this image of Vincent Price as a character actor.
I know.
He is a leading man. He is, you know.
You get Vincent Price to make him look like Vincent Price, not to hide him as policeman number two.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? That comes off and I go, Vincent Price was policeman number two? And really, that does set you up in the way that Yoga Hosers does definitely not. It goes, oh, you're going to be seeing a lot of that going on.
Right.
And it's a pretty amazing thing. Maybe that is why there's staying power in those weird icons. Because you get Vincent Price to get Vincent Price, right?
Well, it's a similar conversation to what we're talking about with the hate fucking. Mm-hmm. You know, you show up to a Vincent Price movie expecting a certain quality of Vincent Price.
Yeah.
And when Vincent Price shows up willing to play ball, you start going, holy shit, there's way more to this guy than I'm.
Sure.
He's giving me more than I even needed. I would have been happy with Vincent Price in a suit killing critics.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he's willing to, he's willing to go in that mole. Yeah. The fact that he's willing to go in, you know, deep into Jew face and drown a guy in a wine cask. I mean, that's some, and maybe it's a symptom of the 70s, right? You have to keep in mind, this is probably the latest we've seen Vincent Price other than his posthumous Edward Scissorhands role.
Mm.
He died before that came out. Either way, that was his last film.
I think so. Yeah. That was my understanding of it, but could just be because you told me that at some point and neither of us looked.
I know that was his last film role. And to look at Theater of Blood is probably the latest we've seen Vincent Price on double feature. It's we're talking 70s, right? This is post, we're into the grindhouse, we're nearing home video. Films are no longer on sets, which I think is largely why people view Vincent Price as a stage performer.
Sure.
Because the next, I mean, a William Castle movie or a Roger Corman movie is just a play with a camera pointed at it.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're in actual live action scenes. We have car chases. There's a boardroom. You have to dive off of a fucking balcony. I mean, this is, to me, one of the things that I guess I had never considered is we're seeing Vincent Price in the real world for the first time.
Yeah.
And he plays a less realistic character than we've ever seen.
Right.
And maybe that's what he gets to play in, is he goes, I have to lend the real world gravity to this fucking cardboard house I'm in.
Sure.
When he's in a Corman movie. But when the camera is pointed at an actual street, he gets to dress up and be all
a crazy
fucking crazy.
Person. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you would see that on Crazy Street in the 70s. Right. That's what you expect to see. Yeah. I didn't even really think about that, but you're so right about the period. Vincent Price and the period he was in and the directors he worked with are all part of what just creates such that classic sense that makes his movies so distinctly of their own. And it's almost like the difference between, you know, for fucking talkies, Yeah. Right? Imagine right. a Vincent Price.
Or the difference between Clerks and Yoga Hosers.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you know, the world changes in a way where silent movie actors may not be able to transition in a way that Vincent Price lived in a world that isn't the on the street in the 70s. And not to say he couldn't have transitioned. Clearly, this one worked and was this amazing, crazy gem of a film that it is. But for him to be so ready to just jump into something else and to think about him prepping for this movie,
mm-hmm.
you would think, oh, well, I've got to nail the fucking Shakespeare. This is the time. I get sure. to nail all of
He's
the best
the
Shakespeare.
He's got Hamlet speech.
Yeah.
He's got, and before he kills himself. I mean, that, and you know that that's written in there, and he sees that on the script and he goes, okay, all right. This is the definitive Vincent Price doing Hamlet, uh-huh. you know, that this is the only time this is going to be
That's
on
the
film.
Moment, yeah. And yet he clearly has a lot to put into those other characters. I don't know how much of that is random or how much is prep time or how much is fucking, I don't know, drugs. Again, we don't have any idea what actually went into his prep for those things or how he created those, but he certainly fleshes out those characters get filled in all of these different ways, and it doesn't seem like at no point is he as exhausted from it. You know, it's just one after another of these disguises of just playing a sort of spy of a movie, of just constantly dressing up and being able to almost in a weird improv way show up, do another character. Now we've got another mask on, we're doing another character. And to always have something for that in the same film as you have to give the Shakespeare and play, you know, an actor playing an actor. And there, God, there's just so much for him to put into it. And then sure. to do it in a movie that's comedic and campy.
Right.
Doesn't seem like the one you were going to stand up. This might be the best representation of everything that Vincent Price can do. What a weird mm-hmm. movie for that to be.
Well, and that's what's funny about the premise is that then you have this guy who's hammy and overacts. Mm-hmm. I mean, and Vincent has to play that. That's not easy.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
not easy to do a good job playing a bad actor.
Yeah.
We've
yeah.
talked about it, you know, with Johnny Depp, with Ed Wood.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to play a realistic guy who's a bad actor who's realistically killing people.
Mm-hmm.
And this it's just the some of the scenes with the super ham-fisted Saw-like moments
yeah
of how to somehow contrivedly stick a dog in a pot pie in order to make it kind of like King Lear-ish.
Yeah, I think that's far from the most contrived one. I mean, I think they get pretty the hairdresser one is probably I don't know. No, they're all like they have one or two, and then after that mm-hmm. they go, oh, we really should have picked right. a different playwright.
And they go, well, one thing we're definitely going to need to do is establish his cast of rampant homeless people. So we need to write in a thing where he gets saved by some hobos or something.
Wow. Just fucking wow. I think the dog pie one might actually be the worst too, to think about it like Saw. It's a funny thing because I think about Saw when I think about Vincent Price because of Pit and the Pendulum. And mm-hmm. we had talked on the Saw Killapalooza way back about the sort of threat of the swinging pendulum and never watching it actually, you know, millimeter by millimeter cut someone in half while they're alive is just a horrendous thing. And for Saw to go there. So I think it's really funny that we come back around to that franchise. But the little traps that they set for these different people, I'm actually really in awe of this movie. And it doesn't try to put me in awe to any degree, you know? For everything that this movie gets away with, accomplishes a large part to Vincent Price, but even just like force feeding that guy his dog is really fucking gross.
Yeah.
It's really gross. It's Saw levels of gross. I mean, I think back to Saw and go, wee, fun, blood. And then I go, oh, don't make me watch that guy eat his dogs again. That was really,
right.
It's all gooey and white and.
Sure.
Ugh.
Also, I love that scene capitulates with Vincent Price pulling off his soul patch and then that guy going, wait a second, you're him.
Yeah. So he's hunting down these critics
mm-hmm.
And I suppose there is something Double Feature needs to say about critics. There's something these movies are saying today. I don't know.
Definitely, I think that we already kind of touched on it a little bit just simply by loving Yoga Hosers.
Yeah.
But I think that we get to have a more explicit conversation in Theater of Blood, which is, you know, fuck you. That's the conversation I kind of want to have. That's the theme I have written down in my spreadsheet. It's fuck you, critics. That's the theme. And some of you who have not been with us for a very long time may have raised an eyebrow when I said fuck you, critics, because you're listening to a film podcast. But something you may not have realized, because we haven't mentioned it in like 2 weeks, is that we don't critique movies,
right,
with the exception of maybe one of the two we did last week. We think all movies are better made. And that's
even the whole premise of that show is oh yeah,
yeah,
are all movies better made?
They don't end up on the show if there's not some merit to them. And we are also operating under the understanding that on a long enough timeline, every film will end up on the show. So I guess by extrapolating that theory, all films have some merit, right? That's,
man, if you would have just said that at the beginning of last week, we would have saved ourselves the whole show. We'd be like, 48 more minutes, I guess. Here's some elevator music. I don't know.
Here's a clip of Vincent Price at a Subway sandwich restaurant.
Right. I thought you were going to say Vincent Price doing the thriller stuff. Good.
Yeah. He also, there's a lesser known Vincent Price cameo on Alice Cooper's Black Widow, which is awesome. He just reads from an encyclopedia on the Black Widow. All you need,
man,
in the entire world,
that,
other than you need Theater of Blood and Alice Cooper's Black Widow, and then everything else is gravy with Vincent Price. And if you disagree, like I said, fuck you, but also sure, say whatever you want to say. But, you know, ultimately, if your thought is at the end of the day, you know, fuck you, this guy, then fuck you back. And this is particularly interesting because it's something that we haven't called out on the show recently, and there's been a little wavering from probably the last time we called on it, but this movie calls into question the idea of an awards ceremony, which, if you want to know the real meaning of an awards ceremony, there's an awesome Jerry Seinfeld clip I suggest you look up. Just look up Jerry Seinfeld awards ceremony. But we early on in the show just trashed the Academy Awards, and I think we still stand largely by that idea.
Sure. I'm with it.
And here's why, is last year Best Picture went to Moonlight-ish and and
not funny.
The Greasy Strangler came out last year. So there you go. Problem. Big mistake. Massive oversight. This year, right, the Academy Award's going to go to probably, I don't know, that James Franco movie, which you and I are both going to fucking love, but Infinity Baby is coming out this year. So I'm just telling you, the thing about the Academy Awards is, and the thing about award ceremonies in general, is they are arbitrarily made up of a group of people that decided that their opinion is worth something more than maybe somebody else, which is this group of critics.
Yeah.
And then you have an award that says that that group's opinion of you is high. And with something like the Academy Awards, or just anything when it comes to cinema in general, and this is something that I think you and I rail against super hard on Double Feature, is that largely the films that get acclaim at the Academy Awards have to some degree, be relatively lowest common denominator. They have to appeal widely to a lot of people.
Sure.
You don't see subversive films. I mean, we've talked about this before, but if you look at a movie like 12 Years a Slave versus a film we did on the show like Shame, that's the same director, and you have to castrate yourself to a certain degree to get Academy attention. And when you look at, you know, Vincent Price's character, maybe that's the issue.
Yeah. Well, this makes some arguments about critics in that way that I think usually for us, it's quite simply everybody else does reviews, who gives a fuck. And then also the art wanted to have a conversation.
Yeah.
For everybody to just go to art to evaluate if they thought it did a good job or not seems
exactly
fucking insane to me. I can't imagine why that's how you walk away.
You're
from
gonna
art
spend
to go
$14 and 2 hours and then walk out and go, okay.
Yeah, it's not a fucking hot dog.
Right?
I don't want to hear your fucking Yelp review of movies. It's an art piece. Like, did you get anything from it? What was it trying to do? Isn't that just more worthwhile to...
Did it make you think? What did you think?
God, I don't know. I don't understand anything in the world. But this also points out, and one of the things it's biggest on, you can always go, well, the critics didn't make anything and critics are just people who can't make art and blah, blah, blah. And I don't really know if I care about that argument or not. But a bunch of people put years of their life into this thing. And rather than suss out the value of it, to just evaluate it. And then really something I don't even think a lot about, but these critics may destroy careers, make and destroy careers based on what they say, seems pretty crazy to me. Mm-hmm. And that a critic mm-hmm. might try to manipulate an actor or manipulate a director through their voice, which I'm sure happens, but the whole critic world, for everybody I've met out here that makes films in LA and just in general, I've never really known anybody who's, oh, what did the critics say? They'll tell me what a good job I did or not, and then I'll change what I, you know, like it'll get to me and all. I'm sure there's people probably who make big movies who give a fuck what critics think and, you know, sure. want to know, like, you make something, yeah. you can't, you could just make it for yourself. Clearly, we've established that with the Yogahosers.
Yeah.
But, yeah. To some degree, you're making it for other people to see it, and you want to know, like, did that work? Did you convey yeah, the thing sure. in the way you want? But, I mean, we're in a place now where I feel like there's a space for yet another type of critic, for a movie poop shoot movie, you know? For yeah. somebody to go, well, now everybody just goes to art so they can say what they, like, was it good or not, and tell their mm-hmm. Twitter. And I will be happy being one of the last two people alive who just fucking refuses sure. to do that.
Right. But I also won't go see the Emoji Movie because...
Oh, don't you, you hate know, that? Don't you hate...
Converse. Converse rationale.
Don't you fucking hate that you're like, yeah, Emoji Movie. And then everybody goes, Emoji Movie sucks. And you go, yeah, I wasn't ever planning on seeing that. Totally. Right.
I mean, I'll see it when it comes out, but I'm not going to... Unfortunately, I've been jaded. The conversation was too loud against and see, you ruined it for me. So fuck you critics is my point.
That is the one other thing. And I'm glad we didn't spend a lot of time beating down critics, but while we're making every possible point we can, with everybody giving their fucking impression of art, when we started the show, I was very proud to say, whether people tell me a thing is good or not, that has no impact on if I mm-hmm. see them. That right. can't be true at all.
Fuck Rotten Tomatoes. Who
can't
cares?
Be true at all anymore. Because just yeah. you speak the first two words of a three-word title and you have 10 people just popping up out of fucking bushes, fucking Sean Spicer style, to just raise their hand and be like, that sucked. That don't say that. It sucked. Wasting your $12.
Yeah.
And you just can't. Mm-hmm. You're so bombarded with it. You can't
and
help
it. And if you're someone
go,
like me who, you know, goes to see every movie I can fucking see, but sometimes I can't see every movie. Yep. And I start going, well, what am I going to see? And I go, I guess I'll see The Big Sick instead of Valerian, because Valerian's supposed to suck.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that's a huge bummer.
Yeah.
Huge bummer.
Because then it's the end of the week and Valerian's out of theaters. It's like, which one are you going to pick? You got one. Which one are you going to pick? And I'm like, yeah. I guess I'm going to pick The Big Sick just because, but honestly, like blindly, with no information, I would definitely pick the sci-fi epic by the Fifth Element guy. But
yep.
a bunch of you said it sucked and that this Chicago rom-com was good. So
yep.
I guess I'll forego the cinema experience for the movie people like.
Let's look on the
great,
bright side.
Great, by the way. Up. Not trying to knock it, but you know, whatever. It's a movie. It'll end up on double feature. Both will, I'm sure.
Long enough timeline, man. Patreon.com/double feature or short enough timeline. These will be the last two movies we do. Please go give some cash on that. It keeps the show running so we don't have fucking ads and we don't have fucking critic nonsense on the show. I don't know how it helps that, but let's just mm-hmm. pretend it does. Also, I mean, we saw Yogahosers and clearly no one else thought that was good. So
right. yeah, that's the problem.
Hey, sometimes it still doesn't work, guys.
Yeah.
You can try and wear me down, but I'm going to see Yogahosers.
What I want to start doing is looking at the Rotten Tomatoes, like 15%. And being like, I would love to be one of those 15%.
I know.
That's what I need to see is be like, I want to be one of those 15% and then go see the movie and be like, no, I'm in the greater percentage, but I would have really right, liked right. to be in that 15%.
Oh, damn. Website is doublefeature.fm. And huge thanks to the people who do keep this show running. All you guys, executive producers, but like all you fucking guys. I want to thank John Martin, Ben Ecker, Mark Abbott, Jordan Sells, David Anderson, Charles Crawford, and Aaron Shore become an executive producer of the show. Just, you know, pop in some money, keep the thing going. We'll be eternally thankful.
Speaking of which, I keep losing track. Somebody picked Theater of Blood at some point in my life. I saw that because somebody told me to see it. Yeah.
Oh, good.
I don't think they picked it for the year, but I think somebody told me to watch it for like a 31 Days of Horror I did last year, like a Ben or a Ross or a, could have been an Aaron, might have been a Will.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know who.
Abbott something. Could be Abbott something. I don't know.
And now it's on the show. So you get to pick the movies. That's how this goes. Not next week though. You don't get to pick the movies. Actually, you kind of do. Next week we're going to do, remember we did that rom-com thing with the How to Lose a Guy and the They Came Together?
Oh, I thought you were talking about that one with the future-y thing in it. That was really good.
That was also good.
It's D'Onofrio, but whatever.
We're going to do another exploration of romantic comedies, but we're going to go really, really highbrow. Okay. Ooh. So we're going to do, imagine a romantic comedy pairing with the fucking highbrow level of My Dinner with Andre. Okay.
Great. I'm in.
So we're going to do When Harry Met Sally, which is fairly quintessential, but also operates on a fairly high level as far as rom-coms go, because, you know, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. And then we're going to pair that with, ready? You ready? You ready? I'm pumped.
Do it. Do
Louis Buñuel's That Obscure Object of Desire.
Oof.
Both kind of romance movies set against kind of interesting backdrops, deal with a lot of complex romantic themes between men and women. Not your standard will he, won't he, who will Kate choose fair. We're going to get meaty.
I would say about 80% chance that I'll cry on that show. So also, you know, tune in for that.
So watch more fucking film.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.